You guys, welcome to another episode of the Truth Matters podcast. I am Cynthia Beaudry, and this series is entitled A Piece of My Mind. I am a sassy Latina. I have been giving people a piece of my mind since growing up in the Bronx, and I became a Christian in the year 2000, but that doesn't mean that I stopped giving people a piece of my mind. I still get to do that. It looks just very differently, actually. Now I get to give people a piece of my mind. Thank you so much for joining me today. I want to apologize for not uploading these past 2 weeks. It has actually been an incredibly busy time for me. I don't know if you know, but my job is actually working with a ministry called A Living Letter. And our mission is to equip the body of Christ to not only deal, but to also heal in the area of sexual brokenness. And we are currently working on a book launch. The leader of A Living Letter is one of my brothers. He's one of my comrades in the faith. He's one of my best friends, Drew Berryessa. And I've been so excited to be able to partner with him to get everything we need to get done to get this book published by the end of this month. So that is our goal. Our launch date, our print date is the end of August. So we have been busy. My time has been full with that. But yet, I have not forgotten about you guys at all. I'm still getting messages from you, which I appreciate so much. You guys have reached out to me telling me when's the next podcast and telling me that this is something that you're looking forward to and that's challenging you. So that helps me because it just reminds me that this is purposeful and that that God is using it. So I am so grateful for you guys that have reached out to me. What I thought I would do for this week's episode is why not combine what I'm doing with A Living Letter, because it's so vital, it's so important, and it's so amazing, and it's such a blessing to me, and I know it will be a blessing to you. But why not combine what I'm doing with A Living Letter and Drew's new book and combine that with my podcast, with the podcast that God has birthed in me? So I am so excited. What I have is an interview that Drew has made in his, this interview in which he talks about his book. He talks about the goal and his heart's intention behind why he wrote the book. It's his story, but it's also woven with so many beautiful truths that are really practical and refreshing. And he basically just shares some of the highlights of his book in this recording that I have. He has an amazing story. He has an amazing story, and he has an amazing way in which he articulates his story. And he also has a beautiful gift that God has given him, in which he can articulate God's intention for sexuality and talk about really hard issues in a way that's just so down to earth. And I think that's something that we need as a church. I think that we need to talk about hard things together and have conversations as a family in vulnerability, but have it be safe and have it be intentional. And so I'm so grateful for Drew. He's played a huge role in my life. God used Drew to help me in my own life transformation and my own sexuality transformation. And so I'm excited what God is doing through our ministry, A Living Letter. And I want to share that recording with you. Listen, we are all dealing with some sort of sexual brokenness, some sort of sexual sin or dysfunction. And if you're not, you're in denial about it, honestly. Sexuality is a huge part of who we are and how God designed us to relate to each other. And Drew in particular has dealt with homosexuality. But wherever you are in your sexuality and your brokenness and your dysfunction and your growing in this area, I promise you that you will be able to relate to what he says, to not only what he says on this podcast, but also to relate to what he writes in his book. And you will also find tools and resources, because God wants to use you to minister to those around you who are also affected by sexual brokenness, which is everyone, by the way, aka. So without further ado, I want to share this recording with you from Drew Berryessa, in which he shares about his book. And his book is called Are We There Yet? Thank you so much for listening and taking the time. And let me know your feedback, your thoughts. If you want to be a part of the book launch and promoting the book, or if you want a copy of it, or if you want more information, you can email me at atruthmatterspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you and bless you.
Here with Drew Berryessa, one of the leaders of our Living Waters team, and we're just so excited to have you on today, Drew, and get to know you a little more and let people into your world a bit. For those of our listeners who don't know you, Drew, why don't you just tell a little bit about yourself, kind of what is your role here at LDub and with Living Letter, which people might not know about.
Right, right. I often say from the front, like, this is my part-time job, because I do carry two roles. So one of my jobs, my role here at Living Waters is I am one of the teaching team. I help direct the soul care aspect of our ministry, which is counseling, discipleship kind of arm of Living Waters. And I help provide general leadership with those Andy and Kim and Ryan and Kate and Danny, yeah, and all those. We kind of contribute to the general direction and mission of the church and offer my perspective to the culture and to the environment of Living Waters.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
And what does that look like for you with A Living Letter? Kind of talk about that a little
bit. Right. A Living Letter is my nonprofit organization, and I'm the executive director and founder of A Living Letter Ministries. And
so fancy.
It's so fancy. I'm so very professional.
Yeah.
What that is it's a nonprofit organization that's mission is to support the church to understand and respond to the issues of sexual brokenness. And it's a huge issue in our culture.
Yeah.
It's one of the biggest dividing issues within the church and within the culture at large. And our mission is to help the church respond in truth and love to these issues. Stereotypically, the church has not handled the issue of sexuality well at all.
Right.
And so my role there as the executive director is to maintain the mission of the organization, to go and to be the primary communicator for Living Letter Ministries, which is one of the reasons why you don't see me at Living Waters every Sunday, is because I travel the country,
right,
and speak in churches and offer seminars and whatnot. And so it's really built to my strengths, which are,
yeah,
to communicate and to communicate the heart and the will of God, and particularly when it comes to sexuality.
Right. That's just so important, because it seems like there aren't a lot of people maybe communicating that message, or maybe being brave enough to communicate that message, because it comes with a lot of flack.
Yeah, I think that one of the issues is that sexuality, because it has been so neglected by the church,
mm-hmm,
there's a big vacuum to know how to understand it from a biblical perspective.
Right.
And generally, there are a lot of voices to sexuality in the church today.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them are biblical. Not all, sure, of them are healthy.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are approaching issues like, from my history, I have a history of struggling with homosexuality. A lot of the voices to the church today misunderstand the issue of homosexuality, and so they're approaching it from either a affirmative standpoint of saying, oh, it's okay, and
right,
and this is who you are. And even embracing the behavior, which is completely outside of scriptural commandment.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's another large faction that's not necessarily embracing the behavior, but they are still misunderstanding the issue to say, no, this is who you are, and this is unchangeable,
mm-hmm,
and we as a church want to come alongside you and love you as a gay person.
Mm-hmm.
And so my perspective, which isn't necessarily wildly popular, is, I think, more gospel-centered, which is,
yeah,
God created us in His image and for His purposes, and He has the ability to redeem us and restore us into those purposes, no matter what our struggle is.
Right.
And so generally you don't get a ton of people that speak from that perspective, because a lot of people who come from that background or have that perspective, they didn't sign up to be the poster child or the spokesman for it. They just,
mm-hmm,
wanted to get on with their life and recover from their issues and live their life.
Right.
And because it's not a very popular issue or popular stance, you get a lot of criticism.
Yeah.
So I'm among a handful of people in our culture that actually have this as a particular perspective, and part of a growing movement of people who are stepping up and taking that mantle on. So that's one of the things I love about what I get to do with A Living Letter,
mm-hmm,
is creating those partnerships with other people who have similar story and affecting culture and change that way.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. It's like a difficult thing, because you are drawing kind of a hard line biblically, being like, no, like, these are the things that we're standing for, but there's still room for us to love you.
Absolutely.
Which kind of seems contradictory, of like, hey, we don't agree with, how you're living your life, but we still want to love you and we want to support you and help you if you want help. And so that seems so contradictory in our culture, but maybe just so necessary.
Well, the funny thing is, it's not contradictory, it's the gospel.
Yeah.
And because the gospel centers on truth and love,
mm-hmm,
as that wonderful tension in the two things. And so where so many of the church make their mistakes is they err on one side or the other because the tension in the two is difficult.
Yeah.
To say to someone, I wholeheartedly disagree with your choices and I fiercely love you and I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Is a really uncomfortable place to be.
Right.
Because it leaves you as the person expressing that in the uncomfortable position to say, I can't change you and I can't make your decisions for you, but I'm committed to loving you no matter what you do.
Yeah.
And then it gives the other person on the other side of that spectrum the uncomfortable position of, you don't agree with me, you don't affirm my choices, and you're not going anywhere. You know, and that's a that's a tension, you know.
Yeah.
And it's one of those places of holy tension that we're called to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of the things that I think that is maybe more unique about how I approach this issue is because on the spectrum, most people either err on the side of truth or err on the side of love. And normally it's very reactionary where they've seen people be rejected, so they push more towards love because they don't want to reject people. Or they've seen accommodation of sin, and so they push more towards the truth end of the spectrum, and then they isolate people. But I'm anyone who spent any time with me knows that I'm just fine in the tension. Like, I'm right in the middle of like,
We're going to sit here.
We're just going to sit here and stare at each other. Anyone who's been in a counseling appointment with me knows I'll just sit and stare at you.
Yeah.
I'm fine in the tension.
I've experienced that firsthand.
You have. Yeah, I remember. Yeah. And I think that that's a holy tension. That's a beautiful holy tension that God has displayed throughout all of creation in his interaction with humanity. I mean, that's the holy tension of Christ being fully God and fully man.
Mm-hmm.
That's the holy tension of male and female. That's a holy tension of, you know, divinity and humanity. It's there's that perfect tension in truth and love that we have to strike with this issue, and that's why I'm so passionate about it.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Let's transition a little bit.
Sure.
So specifically, you recently have written a book.
Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
Yeah, why don't you tell us a little bit about that, what that process has been like?
Hell, on earth. Yeah, yeah. Sorry, podcast. No, writing a book, I've talked to a couple different people who've written books, and I don't have firsthand knowledge of doing this experience personally, but people related to childbirth. Now, I have watched my wife give birth three times, and I can say that emotionally and intellectually, I feel like I went through the same process where there's always a point where you've been working so hard and you realize you can't do this and you want to give up, and that's when you actually have to push harder to birth out this slimy thing that you think that nobody but you could love. So that's really exactly what writing a book has been like for me.
Yeah.
kind of.
Kind of.
Yeah, so I've written this book, and it's called Are We There Yet?
Mm-hmm.
And it's this journey of understanding sexuality, the church, and the long road of transformation. And what does that look like? Not just transformation for the individual, because that's a process I've been on and it's been a long road, but transformation for the church and our responses and how we deal with this issue. Because we have to change how we respond to this issue. We don't have to change the truth at all, and but we have to change how we respond and how we how we steward the truth pastorally to people.
Yeah.
And that is true on if you're on the side of truth or if you're on the side of love, we have to change the way we're doing this.
Yeah.
And so writing the book, I've been in the process of writing the material for the book for the last 2 years.
Okay.
And I think one of the it's all done. It's all edited. It's all ready to put in its final packaging. And it will probably be released at the end of August.
Okay.
Which is exhilarating and terrifying all at the same time. And because it's like, again, back to the analogy of birthing a baby. I mean, when you have your own child, you know you love your child. You're like, look at my baby. And other people are like, oh, it's a baby. You know, you can't tell.
It's a wrinkly old man.
It's a wrinkly old man. Yeah. It's like, that's a nose. You know, that's when you know that, like, you love your baby, but it might be Gollum. You know, so it's, you know, it's, but so that's the process we're at right now is getting ready to release it. And that's a vulnerable thing.
Yeah.
Because anyone who knows me knows that I communicate very honestly and very vulnerably. I think it's one of the most powerful places to communicate is from a place of personal experience and vulnerability and the intersection of faith and theology in those places.
Yeah.
And so that's the entirety of the book. I use stories from my life to illustrate theological truths and pastoral truths that we have to respond to.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's been a great process. I'm really excited it's done.
Yeah.
And Lord help me, but I'm already in the process of writing my second one.
Wow. Oh, geez.
It's, It's kind of, yeah, it's like you forget the pain of birth and you have another kid.
You're so, like, let's this again.
Let's do this again. What's the worst that could happen? So that'll be released at the end of August. And it's been a really good process for me.
Yeah. I love it because it's just like, even with, like, writing is so creative and, like, it is a very vulnerable place. Anytime we're, like, expressing ourselves creatively, it's like, that is a vulnerable place to be. But, like you're saying, it's such a beautiful place to be where it's like we are able to share so much truth in those places. In this process, what has been, like, a really high point for you and a really low point for you? And how do you just, how have you kind of walked through that?
Let's see. I think, in all honesty, one of the high points for me is you know, in any creation of a book, you can't rely on just yourself. You have to get outside perspective. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really grateful for the presence of Anna Elkins in my life, who, anyone who knows Garrison Jan, Anna is their daughter. Mm-hmm. And she's an incredible poet. She's an artist. She's also a content editor, which means when you write a book and you have this manuscript, you hand it to her to make it better.
Yeah.
And when I handed it to her, I said, let me know if it's crap. You know, and that's because it was a very vulnerable thing.
Yeah.
And she had great feedback for the book and helped fine-tune it in little ways that were just made it even more me.
Yeah.
She's very gifted in that. So one of the most gratifying things was to work with another person who I know is an author, is an artist, is creative, and for to have her, in her expert opinion, say, you're an author, you're a really good writer. That was validating, but it was also just really life-giving to say, no, maybe this is something that that God has gifted me to do. I mean, I know I can talk. I can, Lord knows I can talk. But not everyone who can talk can write, and not everyone who can write can talk.
Yeah.
And so there was that weird feeling of like, is this going to actually be really bad? Mm-hmm. And I remember handing the manuscript over to one of our staff, David Wise, and I handed it over to him. He was one of the first people to read it other than Anna. And he even reflected back to me. He's like, he opened it up one day, and he just started to read it, and he goes, oh, no, what if it's awful? What if Drew is one of those people who can speak but can't write? And he, you know, said to his very much relief that that wasn't the case.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Those are some of the high points. I think one of the low points, like a lot of people, I think that one of the most intimidating things for me is the blank page. And so in order to compile a lot of this stuff and really put it into a coherent flow, I had to take a couple of trips to go away to kind of silence all the voices and the distractions and face the fact that I was writing. And Ryan Roden, who has ruined my life in more than one way, has been a catalyst for this. Mm-hmm. He's also the chairman of my board of directors, so he's my double boss, which I should have thought about that before.
Rookie mistake.
But I remember him, like, locking me in a cabin in the woods with no one to talk to. He wouldn't even talk to me, which is torture for me.
Yeah.
He's like, write your book. And that blank page of just, you know, getting there and not knowing how on earth to start this. And, you know, getting stuck on the first paragraph of a book for about 8 hours.
Yeah.
That was a low point.
Yeah.
Of just saying, like, oh, you know, and of course, all the insecurities that we all have them.
Right.
But it's in those catalyst moments where all of them seem to gang up on you at once. And, you know, attack in those moments like, you don't have anything of value to say, your voice isn't important, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that was a real low point of, you know, just feeling like, can I even do this? Do I even have the right to do this? I think another low point or thing that has been difficult for me is anytime you're forging a path where people haven't gone or where it's not popular opinion, you take things that are very dear to your heart and very vulnerable and you put them out for an incredible amount of criticism.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's some of the ways that I approach these issues pastorally and relationally that people on this side of the camp and on this side of the camp don't agree with. And so getting some of those places of negative criticism, not even really feedback, but just like incoherent, negative, wide sweeping criticisms of like, you know, those are hard. Those are hard.
Yeah.
So those, you know, but, you know, I chose to write about a topic that was so easy and not fraught with peril or disagreement, you know. So So those are some of the low points, I think.
Yeah.
Also, I think, you know, this will be my last look. I'm so good on the low points. Because I write very vulnerably,
mm-hmm.
You know, it, even in the name of my ministry is a living letter ministries, which is taken from 2 Corinthians. Basically, it says we are God's living epistle, his living letter open mm-hmm. to be read by all, which means that it requires vulnerability. It requires honesty. In order to write honestly about some of these experiences, I kind of relived them.
Mm.
And there was a lot of pain in that. There was a lot of pain in the rejection and in the hate and in the marginalization of some of the stories that I had.
Yeah.
And so having to go back and actually process those things out and wrestle through that of like, wow, that was horribly painful.
Yeah.
It's a very vulnerable thing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, those are the low points.
Yeah. Did you find like rehashing some of those memories that like it led you to a place of greater freedom or connection with God though? Or was it just like,
well,
this sucks.
This sucks.
Yeah.
No, it all sucked, Anthony. Yeah. It all sucked. Well, I think that in those places, I've fought for a lot of connection with the Lord, which mm-hmm. is why I am where I am.
Yeah.
And why I am who I am. But what did surprise me was some of the connections as the thread moved through my life.
Mm-hmm.
Of how those things kind of stacked on each other and wove together.
Yeah.
And also how they have been very redemptive in how I approach this stuff and the perspective that I have. And it really has proven true that God takes the ashes of our life and makes them beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, Isaiah 61 is a theme verse for my life anyway. It's one of the greatest mm-hmm. promises I think we have in Scripture.
Yeah.
But to actually see those moments and the painful things and to see how they have actively contributed to how I tell my story mm-hmm. and how I instruct the church, I mean, it's really the ultimate version of God taking some ashes and some really ugly things and making them beautiful and purposeful in his kingdom.
Mm. Man, I love that. Is there, just looking at the book as a whole, is there like a main tool or idea that you're wanting people to like grab a hold of, that mm-hmm. you're like, this is the thing I want people to walk away from when they read this book?
I have about 5,000 of those in the book, but I'll give you one.
All right, give us one.
I think one of the things that, well, you'll see in one of the first chapters of the book is the concept of looking past the what to see the why.
Mm.
And that's one of the things I think that when we talk about sexual sin and sexual brokenness and identity issues is that so often in our culture we're responding to the what,
mm-hmm.
the behavior or the presentation of identity, or we're looking at the struggle, but mm-hmm. we're not looking at the reasons why those things are there.
Yeah.
And so an analogy I draw in the book is that often when we're looking just at the what, at the sin, and we're trying to address the sin issue, it's like we're looking at the, you know, it's a common thing in church for saying you judge a tree by its fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And so, right, we've all heard it like, well, that's bad fruit. It's like, true enough.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're only addressing the what or the behavioral issues or the symptoms, what we're doing is we're pulling the bad fruit off the tree and praying that the next season something else is going to grow when the tree itself is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but we don't look at the tree. We don't, you know, we pick off apples hoping for pears to grow next year, and it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So instead of just focusing on the thing, the what, we need to begin looking at the why.
Mm.
The why behind why people struggle with things and the greater issues that are at play. And those make sexual struggles a lot more relatable because all of us have the why. All of us have these core common issues in our humanity and how God made us and our need for relationship and our need for purpose and our need for safety and security.
Yeah.
And they don't go away, and they're common to humanity, but they have different manifestations of brokenness in different people.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can look at some of those issues, we can relate better to people that maybe we wouldn't understand or relate to if we were just looking at the fruit.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. I'll give you one more.
Okay, one more. We'll take
one
it.
More.
Then you have to buy the book.
Then you have to buy the book. No freebies here, people. One of the other issues that one of the other concepts that is really hugely important is the difference between acceptance and approval.
Hmm.
Because in the book, we talk about relating with people who are living in lifestyles that in Orthodox Christianity we would look at and say that's sinful behavior.
Yeah.
And that's a practice lifestyle. And so one of the fears in the church is that if we display too much love to people, that that's somehow passive approval of their life.
Mm.
And it's true that it can be.
Yeah.
When we're not clear where we stand and we're not clear what our convictions are, if we just go out and, I'm just going to love them to Jesus, well, that's a really big cop-out. That's someone who's avoiding difficult conversations.
Mm.
And that can be passive approval.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a difference between acceptance and approval. And acceptance says, I don't have the right to make your choices. I can't change you. I can't convict you of your sin. That's not my job.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't force you to do differently. But I accept that God has given you a free will and you can make whatever choice you want to. I can accept that this is your choice. And I can actually value you as a human being beyond your choices.
Yeah.
And so acceptance gives us the ability to walk in relationship with people.
Mm-hmm.
And admittedly, probably a lot more boundaried and limited than we would if people weren't living in a sinful life.
Yeah.
But in church culture, often it feels like it's all or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I don't agree with you, or if you are living in a sinful behavior, then I'm going to like cast you out,
right,
or not relate to you, or I'm going to passively approve of your lifestyle by not confronting it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it comes back to that tension between the two, where acceptance says and has to say, I disagree with you,
mm-hmm,
but I love you.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I can't approve of what you're doing, but I honor you as a human.
Yeah.
And I give you the respect and the dignity due another mm-hmm human being.
Yeah.
And so in that tension of acceptance versus approval, there's a lot of gray area in relationship and how that plays out,
mm-hmm,
that traditionally the church is not very good at defining for us, because it's not the church's job to define it for us. It's the Holy Spirit's job in us to define where those places land, and that's different for each relationship. And so that's one of the things that I press into in some of the later chapters, of discerning the difference between acceptance and approval and how we operate in acceptance differently than we would in approval.
Yeah. Oh.
So you have to buy the book to really get the lesson.
Yeah. If you really want to know, man, mm-hmm, I love that, because it does just, it values the individual so much.
Right.
It's like, I'm willing to invest in this relationship, even if it's hard.
Well, and that's, for me, that's so much the heart of God.
Yeah.
And that's what I've experienced with
Yeah.
is like, God does not approve of a lot of my behavior.
Yeah.
in the past. I mean, today I'm great.
Yeah.
But he has always been pursuing me in relationship, mm-hmm, and always been valuing me and accepting me, whether or not he approves of who I am, like what I do.
Right.
And so there's a difference there that exists so beautifully in the heart of God,
mm-hmm,
that I would love to see the church get a better handle on in these areas.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Cool. Is there any encouragement you want to just give to people who are maybe pressing into some dreams that are like really vulnerable? Like writing a book is vulnerable. Pursuing any dream can be a vulnerable thing. Is there just like something that you were able to grab onto as you were pushing into this?
Hmm. Well, I think that one of the things that is true with no matter what process you're going through, when it's valuable and when it's when you're trying to break through places to get somewhere, this has been true with my own life and in recovery, as it has been in pursuing dreams, is that in every act, I keep going back to Jesus, and it seemed like in every act of healing, he required an act of faith.
Mm-hmm.
So whether that was, you know, pick up your mat and walk, you know, the guy had to say, okay, well, I've been paralyzed for 30 years, but he's telling me to do this, so I might as well pick up my mat, not knowing if I'm going to actually be able to get off this mat.
Mm-hmm.
There was that act of faith that said, I'm going to choose to believe in the impossible because you're calling me to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that so many of our dreams and so much of our growth and so much of our recovery hinges on response.
Mm-hmm.
Now, none of us are ever going to know the outcome. Like, I have no idea if anyone will buy this book. Like, I honestly don't, actually. Yeah. I know my mom will. Yeah. Thanks, Mom.
We can always count on that.
I know I'll make Ryan buy a copy of the book because he has to. He got me into this mess. He's going to pay for a book. But I can't control the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
But I can be obedient at what God is calling me to do. And ultimately, the outcome is up to God anyway.
Yeah.
And so I think that maybe that's the takeaway, is it's, you know, for whether it's a dream or whether it's that place where you don't know if you can grow past this point,
mm-hmm,
or you don't know if this relationship is ever going to heal, because so many of those things have been true in my life where it's like the result is not up to me.
Yeah.
My job is to be faithfully obedient, to respond to God's word, to his call, mm-hmm. to his invitation.
Yeah.
I can say that not all things have ever worked out exactly as I would expect them to.
Right.
But God has always been faithful to show up in those places where I've said, okay.
Yeah.
And so I'm trusting him with this.
Yeah, totally.
That's all I can do, really.
Right.
I have no ability to make this
no
succeed.
Control.
No control yeah. whatsoever. I've given yeah. up all of that. But ultimately, there's a joy that comes in seeing God do the impossible.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a roller coaster.
Yeah.
Inevitably, you might wet yourself or crap your pants or want to leave the roller coaster.
Yeah.
But at the end of it, when it's over, you're like, that was thrilling.
Yeah.
That's this ride.
Yeah.
And it's been the ride of my life.
Totally.
Wow. So, yeah, I would say if you're facing a dream or if you're facing, any of those issues in your life, be obedient to God.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing is be very self-aware.
Mm.
All right, so I am a professional communicator.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not outside of the realm of possibility to think that God might be calling me to communicate.
Right.
Right? If I had never done any of that before, and I say immediately, I'm going to write a book. I mean, look at the places in your life that God has already been calling mm-hmm. you into and blessing and giving you grace and strength to do.
Yeah.
And that isn't to say that you don't take greater steps in things that are outside of the box.
Mm-hmm.
But what I would say is that God, you know, there are breadcrumb trails in my life where I know that he has been leading me that connect.
Mm-hmm.
And so if someone were to say, like, Drew, what's your next goal? And I say, I'm going to be, Olympic ice skater. No, I'm not.
It's like, well.
No, I'm not. Number one, I'm not coordinated at all physically. Number two, you know, I'm old. Number three, I can't even jump an inch on flat ground.
Yeah.
So it's like, this is not going to be something I'm going to do.
Yeah. This might not be a practical dream.
Mm-hmm. And I think that there's sometimes people look at impractical dreams as ways of avoiding the ones that God is actually calling us to, mm-hmm. because those ones are actually greater risk.
Yeah.
Because there's potential for success.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say for people that are facing these things, really look at the things that seem congruent with who God's made you to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think those ones are the risky ones.
Yeah.
Because those ones actually mean more.
Yeah.
You know, if I fail at becoming an Olympic ice skater, oh well, you know. But if I fail at writing a book
mm-hmm.
and I'm called to be a communicator, there's a big risk there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would say press into the Lord. Mm-hmm. Ask your friends in your community. Like, look at the dreams that God's putting on your heart. And the ones that are super risky that also match up with who you are,
mm-hmm.
go for it.
Yeah. I love that. So good. Just as we're wrapping up, is there just something that's been burning on your heart that you would just want to share with people today? That, like, this is something that I just have, and I want to communicate this to people. I mean, we've covered a lot. So, I mean, there may not be that.
I think maybe one of the things that is always a constant theme for my life is that we need to believe in redemption.
Mm-hmm.
We need to believe that God can do the impossible or the seemingly impossible in our lives.
Yeah.
And I think that we start with ourselves and we look out. You know, it's like Jerusalem, Judea, mm-hmm. and the ends of the earth. You know, it's like, so you start and you look at places in your own life where you go, what's the relationship or the struggle that I've had that mm-hmm. I don't ever seem to find victory in or healing in? And we have to trust that God can do redemptive things in those places.
Yeah.
And so constantly what you always hear me talking about is trusting the Lord to redeem places that seem impossible to redeem.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one of the things that drives me the craziest in my line of ministry is that there's such a strong cultural narrative that people who struggle with sexual orientation issues cannot mm-hmm. experience transformation.
Mm-hmm.
And to that, I say, what God are you believing in?
Yeah.
And I say this to all Christians, actually. If you don't believe God can transform someone struggling with this, then how can you have faith that he can transform your life?
Mm.
Because it's the same power at work in me
yeah.
that raised Christ from the dead that is addressing your issues.
Yeah.
And so we either believe in an all-powerful God or we don't.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That's a little light one to end the time today.
No, I love
light little nugget.
Yeah. Where can people find out more about what you're doing online, Instagram?
Yeah, Facebook, Instagram. I have profiles on both of those for A Living Letter Ministries, which is my ministry. That's going to be where all the updates are. One of the things with the book is that we are self-publishing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a smarter thing to do,
which
also means we have to self-promote. Mm-hmm. So we're developing a team of people to help promote the book.
Okay.
And what you get if you join that team, mm-hmm. and look for it on Facebook and Instagram, is that you get a copy of the first three chapters to review,
mm-hmm.
and then some help in saying, how do you promote this
mm-hmm.
on social media platforms to say that more people are aware of the book.
Yeah.
So that we're going to be rolling that out here in the next week or so.
Okay.
And so I'd say follow my ministry.
Yeah.
Donate.
A Living Letter.
A Living Letter. Donate to A Living Letter. And follow it on Facebook and Instagram.
Okay.
Those are the primary channels that I use. Also, I have a website, mm-hmm. which is aLivingLetter.org.
Okay.
And if anyone's interested in being on my mailing list, there's a tab there to sign up for our newsletter, and I would love for everyone at Living Waters to be a part of our mailing list.
Cool.
So that because we don't often get a lot of time to tell from the pulpit or from the front of the church the things that I'm doing, because I think you'd get kind of tired of like, oh yeah, Drew's going here again.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, but if you're really interested and you want to pray for Sue's and I and our family and our ministry, mm-hmm. if you find it to be important, follow us, sign up for our newsletter, follow us on social media. It really does encourage us to know that we're not alone in this.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks so much, Drew.
Thank you, Anthony.
Thank you.